Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Freeman's Podcast. Today, I'm joined again by my good friend, Gabe Jolly. We're going to be talking about our second episode in our series on nationalism and civic engagement for Christians. And today, we're going to be looking at an idea called sphere sovereignty. It was really fathered by Abraham Kuyper. We'll get into some of what the Bible has to talk about government's role. And then, yeah, we'll end up talking about just some of the biggest Christian thinkers when it talks who really wrote about Christian involvement. So yeah, let's get started. What's up, Gabe? How are you?
Hey, man. I'm doing pretty good.
Good. Man, talk about crazy trying to get this started tonight.
Indeed.
Yeah,
In a lot of different ways.
I know. I've been just overthinking things lately and I think it's just time to relax. So,
it is.
With that being said,
I'm here.
That's why you're here.
I'm so good at relaxing.
You are so good at making me edit things.
Yes. Yes, Joel. I am very good at making
I love you, buddy. I wanted to ask you as we get into this. I know we're going to get into Christian... I don't know if we're getting Christian nationalism right now, but definitely at some point you'll be having that talk. But before we get into our talk today on sphere sovereignty and government's role and all that stuff, I wanted to ask you, because we were kind of talking about this beforehand.
Okay.
What is your favorite fishing memory?
Favorite fishing? Okay, this is an easy one.
Okay.
So I was very little. I was probably... I was probably about 6 or 7, maybe 8. And my dad took us fishing on a very old and dear friend. He had a bunch of property and he had a bunch of old ponds on his farm. And so there's Mr. Larry. Loved Mr. Larry. And so we would go out there and fish. My dad would get us like some cream sodas, root beers, whatever. And we'd go fish and we had our little
your guy day.
Spin reels. Yeah. And so one day my brother, my middle brother, he was casting, right? He was just doing his thing. He was using, we were using lures at that point.
Yep.
We started early with lures.
Good.
Yeah.
That would have probably had me going longer with fishing.
Yeah. So he caught a carp. No, he caught a brim. It was a very small brim.
Yeah.
A very, very small brim. And he's reeling it in, and it's close enough to the water, to the edge where we can see it.
Yep.
Right? And then as he's reaching down in the water to grab it, a massive carp comes up and eats the brim on the line and runs with it. And so then the rod's just spinning.
Yeah.
And so then my brother catches it, and he's still gripping it, and it yanks him in after it.
Seriously?
Yes.
Dang. Yeah. Let's go.
And then my dad just jumps in the water and grabs him. My brother just eventually lets go of the rod.
Oh, man.
So he lost the pole and everything. But it was a massive fish.
Yeah.
And at the time, like, I was 6, 7, and my brother was probably, he was around 5 maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe 6, depending on where the age range, where we were in that. It was just somewhere around there. And so it yanked him pretty good.
Dude, I love that.
It tossed him.
It was a big fish.
And at the time, that was the biggest fish I'd ever seen. And even then, it was probably massive.
Yeah.
I mean, it was big enough to eat a brim on a line.
Yeah.
So it was a big fish.
Dang, man.
It was a big fish.
I love that.
That was really fun. That was an early fishing memory. And that's really cool.
Yeah.
Just seeing one fish eat another fish and drag my brother in after.
Especially at that age, I've never seen that. I pulled fish out that had like half part of a fish still in its mouth, but
to
I've
see
never
a fish eat another
eat it
one
actively. On my line. Yeah.
It was
not
crazy.
Happen.
It was wild.
Well, I mean, I guess it happened when I was fishing off the coast, but that's different because things just eat other things out there.
It's normal.
Yeah.
In a little brim pond in a cow pasture, it's pretty rare.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of my favorite fishing memories, so I have some great ones, and I could talk about when I caught my biggest fish and all that. But honestly, I have one of my little sisters, and she started fishing with me back in 2020. So that was 5 years ago.
Okay.
And how old is she? She was probably 11. No, she was 10, I think.
Okay.
Okay. So she started pretty early with me.
Yeah.
I'd take her out there and fish, and she would outfish me most days. Like, she has outfished me many days where she pulls more in than I do.
Wow.
And I'm just like, I am so proud of you, but so frustrated. So I think one of my favorite memories with her is we were, We were out in a pond behind our house. And this is like the first time I'm out there with her casting a line. And like that she's ever casted a line. Okay.
Wow.
And she cast it out there. And I just have her on a little Texas rig. And she gets herself a bass. And it's a decent, you know, he was about that big.
Yeah, pretty good.
For average, a 10-year-old, that is a massive bass. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So she's starting to reel this thing in. And she gets to this point with her little fishing rod that she can't get it to turn over one more time. So she just takes the rod and she just starts walking backwards with it and just toes that sucker in. And I'm just sitting there with my phone, just the proudest, biggest brother in the world. Like, you are not letting this fish go. You have this. Like, just the ingenuity, just the thought of it. Just go, well, it's coming with me. And she just did it. And I was like,
that's so
I love this.
That's awesome.
So that's probably one of my favorites. I think another one, not to just keep going on fishing stories, but golly, this one was so funny too. I was out fishing in a boat with my little brother.
Yeah.
And it's starting to rain.
Yeah.
But I'm like, you know, the fish love the rain, so we're gonna keep going. And he's talking to me, telling me the story. I don't remember the story because of what happens next. And I'm just kind of looking at him, looking back at my line, looking at him, just reeling it in on a spinner bait.
Yeah.
And I talk and I look over just in time to see the line go bam. It took off. And I was like, oh my gosh, so I'm just pulling in. And my little brother, he has the wherewithal. He starts pulling his in, right? And so I'm pulling this sucker in, fighting this fish. And to that time, it was the biggest fish I'd ever caught. So I'm pulling this sucker in. And he's pulling in. And right as he gets his line within about 3 feet, instead of reeling in the rest of it, he's trying to be quick. He just pulls it out of the water. But when he does, wraps itself several times around my line, around my pole on my line. And I'm like, oh, what are you doing? And I'm just keep reeling in him despite it. And then the fish comes up to the boat and goes under the boat. And so my little brother grabs my line and pulls the fish back out while I'm sitting there like still reeling, trying to get this thing in so the line doesn't snap. We finally get this thing in, and it is massive fish. And I'm just like, how does this happen? How did you get your line around my pole like that? But man, talk about good times with my little brothers and sisters.
That's good.
Awesome.
I love it.
Yeah, man.
Heck yeah.
All right. So,
love fishing stories.
Oh, I do too. Not much of a segue into our topic today.
Not at all. Cold turkey.
Fishing and sphere sovereignty. Who knew it? So, I wanted to talk about this idea because last week, the episode that we dropped was episode one. Yep. And in that episode, I talked about just the idea of the nation state and the importance of the nation state and what it was. And basically, it's the idea that it's a group of people with a shared identity and purpose who live within a geographic area who live under a single form of government. They have their own government.
Right. And I think that's an important distinction to make, especially for you and I, where like our own personal opinions on what that government can or should look like differ. What we both agree on is the virtue of nationalism itself.
Well, yes. And we'll get into the discussion of nationalism versus patriotism versus is there good or bad nationalism.
Right, right.
Yes, last week's episode, I make the argument because I was listening to a couple of different thinkers from the Alliance for Responsible Citizenship. It's a new organization that Jordan Peterson's starting with some other people. And it's great stuff. Look it up.
Good.
Yeah. I was just listening to several of their talks in their conference, and one of them had brought up just the idea of a nation state and good nationalism versus bad nationalism. And I was like, okay, let's look at this from a Christian perspective. So that was last week. And that brought up, okay, so we have the nation state. It's a good thing. God is the one who came up with the idea of a nation state, though how we phrase it and how we define it can differ. But the idea of, like I just defined it a second ago, that we all, these groups of people live within under a sovereign government and they live in a geographic area. They have a shared identity. That is a good thing. And it will be that way. And just to rehash from last week one more time, that Christ is Lord over all. He has a global kingdom, but he's also Lord over each of these sovereign nation states until he returns and, you know, sets up his earthly kingdom. But until then, it's good that there are nation states, and the idea of trying to get rid of them is a bad idea. But that brings up sphere sovereignty.
Yes.
Sphere sovereignty is, and I'll just read a little bit of information on it real quick for our listeners and our viewers, I guess. But Abraham Kuyper. So Abraham Kuyper, he was a Dutch politician, and I believe he was a pastor. If he wasn't a pastor, he was certainly a Christian thinker and culture commentator. Yeah. And he, I think he was a prime minister at one point of, I said Dutch.
The Netherlands.
Yes. I was about to get that wrong. I was like, oh no. man, brain is not working today, guys. Drop a comment if you can relate. thanks. Don't say anything. But anyways, so he's a pretty cool guy, but he kind of really espouse this idea of sphere sovereignty, and that is where the family, church, state, education, commerce, all these different spheres,
yeah,
all these different institutions exist under the lordship of Christ and his distinct, and they have distinct God-given responsibilities. Mm-hmm. Kuyper emphasized that no sphere should dominate another. For instance, the family is responsible for nurture and moral formation of children in the family. The church is there for the spiritual teaching and discipleship, and the state is for justice and public order, you know, as we rehash over and over again, for the protection of our God-given rights and liberty and our right, just public safety. You know, it's supposed mm-hmm. to protect the borders, protect the people. Each of these institutions, they should all operate with the authority appropriate to its purpose, but none should attempt to work and try to operate in another sphere's lane. When the state intrudes into areas like education or religious practice, Kuyper warned, when the state does that, it risks becoming tyrannical.
Yeah.
So just to rehash that, because I want to make sure we're clear on it, Kuyper's given this idea that if the state tries to step in and run your family, or it's to tries to run the church, for instance, the institution of the church, it becomes tyrannical.
Or vice versa.
Or vice versa, yes. Yes, absolutely, yes. It's that would be anarchy versus right. tyranny, yes. But yes. So that's his idea. His concept of sphere sovereignty was designed to protect liberty and ensure that all areas of life will be glorifying to God by remaining within their God-ordained bounds, functioning the way God designed them. Mm-hmm. So I picture it like, you have all these cylinders, right? You have church, state, family, education, business, entertainment, arts, you know, all these things. Christ is Lord over all. He creates them all. Mm-hmm. He institutes them. They all are supposed to function for God-given ends.
Right, and he also gives in certain individuals the tools and gifts necessary mm. to function within those spheres and function well.
Yes.
And part of the what should be, and where education falls in this, and also where the role of the family falls into mm-hmm. this, is being able to identify those gifts in individuals early.
Yeah.
And help to build them up to inhabit these various spheres.
Exactly.
And this was the very like cultural and theological philosophy that I grew up in, like in my home church, mm-hmm. but we call them domains.
Yeah, that's right? Great.
You have domains of society, mm-hmm. right? And you exist within your domain, and your domain could be education, you're a teacher. It could be in the public sector, right? You work for the government, mm-hmm. public service. Mm-hmm. It could be like you're a medical professional. You work in law enforcement. Mm-hmm. You're a plumber. You're an electrician. Whatever that domain is, mm-hmm. that is your domain.
Right.
And your job is to inhabit that domain as a believer, as a Christian, make disciples within it.
Yes.
Right. And so, but then within sphere sovereignty, especially as men, oftentimes we can have one foot in multiple.
Yep.
You know,
supposed to.
You're supposed to. You're supposed to have a foot in
the church, in the family.
Right. In your vocational domain, definitely within your family, definitely within the church.
I would argue also, especially in our political context, within the cultural right. political context right. of our country. Yeah, for right. sure.
Exactly.
Should be involved.
I think the way, And the fundamental question that has to be answered when we talk about sphere sovereignty is we talk about these spheres being not isolated but distinct. And the question then becomes, okay, how can they interact in a way that's beneficial for the people, right? Because if they're all just functioning within their own cylinders with no crossover, how can there be a healthy amount of interplay between them to perform or to put forth a healthy society? And I think the answer to that question has to lie in the Christian. Yeah. Right, the man who understands, and the man and woman who understands that they have the gifts they have by God's divine ordinance, and they've been set in the world for a purpose.
Yeah.
And as men, our job is to be provider, priest, and prophet over our families, to be a good steward of the resources that we have within our society. So that looks like in public office, being a good steward of the funds that you have, the votes that you have, but also being a good citizen. Right, and contributing to viewing your civic duty as part of your society, right? And then it also looks like inhabiting your vocational domain as a believer, bearing the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ, loving people with the love of Jesus Christ, and seeking to make disciples within that.
Well, I think that point, I'm glad you brought up love. That's something that I like to just really try to hammer on. Like, the reason Christians should be involved in all these different spheres, especially the political one, is out of love for God, out of love for our neighbor, because we love God, we love His authority over all the spheres, all the domains. We love how He structured them, and we want to see them function the way that they are supposed to be structured to glorify Him, because that's what's going to bring about the best human flourishing for our neighbors, as we love our neighbors. And the way you had said that about the domains, I really appreciate that. Something that I wanted to... My brain just completely crashed. I was going somewhere, and I'm like sitting here like...
Talking about the fact like how they're supposed to be like distinct but not isolated.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Yes, that I loved that. So, because there's supposed to be crossover, right?
Yeah.
This is something, because we've talked about separation of church and state in other episodes.
Yeah.
And what I like... to argue with people, and this is the way our founding fathers understood it, this is the way I believe Christian theology has taught it for centuries, is that it's not, or the proper separation of church and state is that this institution of the state should never run the institution of the church, and the institution of the church should never run the institution of the state.
Right, but the inhabitants of the church can be involved in running
and so I like
and
to
should
yes they should so yeah. I like to put it this way: it is a institutional separation, not an influential self separation.
Yes, I like that.
And so institutions are supposed to stay separate. They are they have distinct lanes, but they influence each other. The church raises up godly, righteous citizens that then influence the state, and the state then becomes good and benefits, protects the rights and liberties of the people, and causes human flourishing as that takes place. Mm-hmm. So, love the idea of sphere sovereignty. Love this concept from Abraham Kuyper. Each of these spheres have unique authority, and they also have unique responsibilities. And I think you touched on that really well, so I really appreciate that. He did talk about, like, when government, specifically, because they have so much power,
right?
But it can be with any of the other spheres. When governments overstep, they can, it leads to tyranny.
Yes.
And that's something Kuyper really warned against, especially in his day, because if I'm not mistaken, it was he lived in the 20th century with all the totalitarian regimes, and he just witnessed all of that. And so he's sitting here warning, like, hey, let's not go back to that. We need to have our separate lanes, though they influence, but they need to be separated. And, you know, I kind of want to just like talk about some examples of government overstepping into these other spheres. Like, I did an episode on Trump closing down the DOE.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Yes.
Because that should be as close to the states, close to the parents as possible, because they have the responsibility before God more than anyone else to raise their children.
Right. And unfortunately, we live in a time where culturally, as a society, as inhabitants of the world we live in, under the regime of the government, we live in a world where it has become societally acceptable for the government to be responsible for education. Mm-hmm. So the very concept of parents being taking of parents taking on the responsibility of education for their children, or at least taking a more active role, mm-hmm. is so unbelievably alien.
Yeah, it is.
And the concept scares parents.
Sure it does.
And the fact that it scares parents scares me.
Yeah, and I think part of the reason it scares parents is because they've been told from, like, not just our generation, our parents and their parents, but they've been told since the early 1900s with the progressive era, the experts should be running this, and you right. don't know enough.
Right.
And I'm sorry, that's not true. God has given those children to you as parents, and he has called you to be responsible for their right. education, what they learn. That's on their parents' shoulders before anyone else. That doesn't mean that they all have to homeschool by any means.
Right.
But they should be involved, should be aware, and should yes. be working towards curriculums and things that they want their children being taught in the public arena. And I love the idea of it being back in the state's control, because the closer the decision-making power is to the people, the more freedom they have and the greater protection right. they have over their children.
That's right.
So that's one area. That's an example. I think you have other examples where would you have our court systems, and we'll get into some of Schaefer. Schaefer was huge on the courts.
Yes.
But the redefining of marriage mm-hmm. back in, what was it, 2015?
Mm-hmm.
Good grief, it's been that long. But when the Supreme Court said that, same-sex marriage is legal.
Yeah.
Like that redefinition of marriage, the courts don't have that authority. The Constitution doesn't talk anything about it.
It did the moment that we as a society allowed the government to legislate marriage. When we put marriage in the hands of the legislature, we now open the door to give them the authority to start defining it.
I would agree with you, but here's the problem. The legislature never redefined marriage. The courts did.
Right. Right.
So
yes. So, but the reason the courts did was,
and I'll just say this. I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, you're good.
The legislature had defined marriage as, especially, I'm going to use Georgia as an example.
Right.
It was it, and I think it's still in our Constitution, the Georgia State Constitution, that marriage is between one man and one woman. They made that a part of the Georgia State Constitution.
Right.
So our legislature did that here. The federal legislature, Congress, didn't want to touch it. And so it gets gone through the courts, and then the courts then legislate from the bitch
right.
with this,
right.
what that's called judicial activism. That's yes. the term, where they basically redefine the wording of the Constitution. They say it's a living document and it should meet the expediency of the times, so they can redefine, they can come up with rights and things that exist to them in the Constitution when they don't at all. And that comes up with the idea that the Constitution should be, in my opinion, and I believe this is James Madison even argued this, who, he helped massively in the Federalist Papers. He understood the Constitution, that the Constitution should only be understood in the meaning of the words that were understood when they wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
And as a lot of the conservative Supreme Court justices have argued, that's how it should be interpreted, is the original meaning of the words in the time that they understood what they meant by what they said. And that gives us security and stability. This living document nonsense, where there's judicial activism, where they can make the law mean something, therefore make law out of nothing, therefore they are becoming a legislature without any accountability to the people, that is an overstep. That is tyranny.
Right. Right. And that's where when we talk about the idea of sphere sovereignty, it becomes really important that we as a society are aware of sphere sovereignty.
Yes.
Right? Because if you're not aware, and if you don't have the society is not of the mentality of being aware of the spheres of authority and where they should be, then
yeah.
In a power vacuum, all that authority is going to go somewhere.
Yes.
It's going to go somewhere.
Yeah.
And it's usually going to end up getting drawn towards the people who have the ability to do something about it.
Yeah.
Or at least have the perceived capability where it could be. You know, of a very famous author of fiction once said that power resides where men believe it resides.
That's good.
Right. And
who's,
it's
who said that?
A very famous author.
Okay. okay. Got it.
And,
it's okay.
And
I love that.
But he said power resides where men believe it resides.
Yeah.
And that's very true in this case.
Yeah.
When the silos, if you will, the domains started to become murky, and the people who, the Christians who should have been inhabiting them mm-hmm. with the proper authority in hand were not present, mm-hmm. that authority had to siphon off somewhere. It had to flow somewhere.
Yeah.
And it flowed to where people believe power resided.
Yeah.
Which was the government.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm glad you said that, because as you were saying, I'm just like, gosh, just for you and me, know who you are.
Yeah.
Like, know who God has made you as an individual, as a man. God has given authority to us. He's given authority to us to govern ourselves, to rule ourselves under his sovereignty. We are to go take dominion, bring order to chaos. It is first and foremost our responsibility to protect and defend and provide for our families and our neighbors. I am my brother's keeper.
Right.
I'm not Cain who says, am I my brother's keeper? I am my brother's keeper. That is God's design for us. He wants us to be standing up for each other, defending each other, loving each other, ensuring justice exists.
Right. And it's very difficult to have your brother in mind if you don't first have yourself in order.
Yeah.
If you don't know who you are, if you don't know what it is that you have been made to do, it's very difficult to have a mind for others.
Right.
And right? Because you're always going to be considered with, how can I get myself right?
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to how can I serve and love my brother and help them get right? And I'm a youth pastor in town at our church.
Yeah.
And we were having this conversation with our students last night where they were asking a lot about like direction in life and where am I going to go and what I'm going to do. And one of our students was asking about like, I'm really good at art. I like doing art, but I just don't know if that's God's will for me. I don't know if that's what I should be doing. And I said, you use the word should be doing, but what is it you like doing?
Yeah.
What is it that the Lord has gifted you to do? What do you enjoy doing?
Yeah.
What is it that fills you with joy? What is it that makes you feel as if you're walking in the manner in which you were crafted to walk?
Yeah.
And whatever that is, pursue it. And the problem is when we become so mystified about God's will that we overcomplicate things to the point where we can never serve our brothers because we're constantly wondering what right. is it?
Well, think about it. When my orientation gets right, God is first. And then he, because he's first, I can then see clearly who he has made me to be, his creature.
Right.
As a man, I'm called to take dominion. I'm called to, you know, as I just said a minute ago. And as you were telling your student, God gives us these passions, desires, and these things that when we walk in them, we get this sense of this is what I was made to do.
It's a sense of rightness.
It's like, yes, rightness. And it's like in the movie Chariots of Fire, Eric Liddell, he looks at his sister and he's like, look, God made me fast, and when I run, I feel his pleasure on me. And that is, your dominion is going to look different. If we were still living in the time of the garden, the fall hadn't happened, and lots of humans were around, I would probably be cultivating pineapples, because I like pineapple.
Sure.
You'd probably be doing, I don't know.
I'd be somewhere around the Acropolis, probably.
Okay, so whatever.
Wherever the thinkers were, I'd been like, I can't handle any.
But I'm just saying, like, you would have just, like, you would have picked something else because you have your own uniqueness right. that God has given you. And so just to, like, all this to say, to get back to, like, sphere sovereignty and this idea of when the state oversteps is because, like you said, we forget who we are. Mm-hmm. And so power resides where we think it's supposed to. Well, I'm here to say power resides first and foremost in God. Mm-hmm. And then he establishes it in individuals. And then they, as they come together in a community, right. it resides in the people of that community who then can delegate authority, yes. not rights, not power in the sense of give up stuff, but they delegate authority to administer and provide, you know, a
stewardship,
a common protection, a common defense, justice, righteousness, right. and equity.
And that thought process has to begin with the recognition that the sole power, the final authority resides with God.
Yes.
Resides with
the Creator. Absolutely.
Because if you don't have that source, and if you don't have the understanding that the spheres are, in a sense, they are aligned as far as equality, if you will.
Yeah.
And if you miss that, then inevitably men will believe that power resides with the government because it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Because if you miss the fact that God resides over the church, God resides over the family, God resides over the domains, God resides over the government, if you just rank order those things in what men mm-hmm. believe should be the most powerful, the government is what's going to get put at the top of the hierarchy.
Yeah. Right.
Right? And so now, once you've made that small mental adjustment, you've made that one mental mistake, right, within the social thought, immediately you've just opened the door towards tyranny.
Yeah.
Because now all of a sudden you've taken God out of the equation. You've removed the foundation upon which the whole thought process is supposed to be built.
The state becomes God.
Yes.
Yes.
And to transfer into Schaeffer.
Yeah.
Something has to inhabit the upper story.
Yeah.
Right? And something
upper story.
something has to inhabit the realm of grace.
Yeah.
Something has to inhabit the realm of authority, of divine yep. authority. And if it's not God, man is going to put something up
yep.
there.
Yep.
Something is going to get put up here.
Yes.
Right? And either it's a philosophy, right? Whether it's communism, either it's a false deity, either it's a man, or it's the government itself. Or it could be the very concept of the self.
Yeah.
Right? And this is where you get into this, and now that's what happens when people, like when you get psychopaths. Mm-hmm. It's psychopathic tendencies because a person has placed themselves in the upper story.
Yeah.
Right. Something has to be the source of authority.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that as you were just saying, like, when you remove the concept of God being over this, which, as I touched on last week's episode, that Jesus Christ is Lord of Lords and King of Kings. He has all authority in heaven and on earth that has been given to him, Matthew 28:18. When you remove that idea from society and culture, then the state becomes God. The breakdown of all the spheres takes place and they get blended together. And what do you have? You have chaos again. God is a God of order, and he set up this system for our good. When order exists, when liberty is ordered, we get to function as God designed us to function. And so when these spheres are in their proper domain, they stay in their lanes, and we acknowledge that God is over all of them, well, then when the government becomes tyrannical, we have a higher authority to appeal to.
Right.
Like, one of my favorite things from the founding, American founding, was a flag that George Washington had commissioned. It was a pine tree on a white field, and it had over the top of it an appeal to heaven.
Yep.
Because they realized that if they are going to have any kind of success, then they have to appeal to heaven for as they said it, the rectitude of their intentions, like the rightness of their cause.
Yeah.
I love that concept. But anyways, getting back to this, government oversteps, everything becomes chaotic. God is a God of order, so he set up the system of these different domains and spheres.
Right. And do you want to go ahead and transition to talking about nationalism? Because I have a thought about this.
We can definitely touch on it now if you want to.
Okay. So an interesting thought with this, with the conversation of nationalism, is we can sit here and we can poo-poo on the overreach of government and becoming tyranny. And what's interesting, though, is...
Real quick, I want you to, if you can, I want you to define nationalism. Because I attempted to do it last week. And definitely we're going to get into it in another episode. Okay. But if you can, try to.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to hear your thought, and then we go on.
Yeah.
And we'll get to it later.
I would define nationalism as I'm going to say the natural tendency of man to organize themselves around shared values and goals.
That's really close to what I would define it as, but I don't want to get into that. So I appreciate your point.
Right. So, and with that, mm-hmm. I think people will mentally associate nationalism with government.
Sure. Yeah.
And I think it is appropriate and necessary to separate the two.
Okay.
Because we can both sit here and we can poo-poo on the overreach of government, the governmental tyranny, and say that we should have God in the upper story, mm-hmm. the church, domains, the family, the government, all in the lower story, sharing equal position of authority.
Right.
And we can also be nationalistic in the same tendency, because nationalism is not my support for the American government. My nationalism is my support for my brothers.
Yeah.
For my community.
Right.
That's what makes me a nationalist.
Right.
Right. Is the fact that I value the well-being of Americans, more specifically Georgians, more specifically citizens of Lumpkin County.
Yep.
I value the citizens of Lumpkin County over the citizens of Forsyth County.
Yeah.
I value the citizens of Forsyth County and Lumpkin County, the state of Georgia, over Alabama, North Carolina, Florida.
Right.
And I value the citizens of North Carolina, Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama, over the citizens of Wisconsin, New York, California.
Okay.
But then I value them over the citizens of pick a random nation.
Yeah.
And that's nationalism. It is the fact that because that my value hierarchy of the people that live within my most immediate context mm-hmm. are dependent upon shared value, shared goals.
Yes.
Right? Shared customs, shared morals.
Right.
Right. We think the same. We have the same art. That culture is a bubble.
Yeah.
Right. And that's nationalism. And that's not, and again, to use the same phrase, nationalism is good when it is distinct but not mm-hmm. isolated.
Mm.
Right? Because I can be, and this is where nationalism gets a bad rap because of the Nazis, rightfully so.
Yep.
But where they
or
went
or any of the other totalitarian regimes that ran with it.
Right. And where they went wrong was the isolation component. Mm. Is they introduced isolation and superiority into the formula.
And I would just argue that the reason nationalism went bad, because it doesn't have to, but the reason it did was because in the fascistic societies, in the collectivist societies, in the totalitarian regimes, the reason it goes bad is because, guess what? They makes the state to be God.
Right.
And when that happens, you might still have some kind of structure with some of these domains and spheres, but if the state becomes God, then any sense, of course the state's going to want to draw this nationalistic ideology to itself and make the people want to worship the state. That's the nature of evil when it gets into positions of power.
Right. And then to use the analogy of God worship,
mm-hmm.
the God, the deity of the state desires power.
Yeah.
And in order to purchase power, something must be sacrificed. And you sacrifice the well-being of your neighboring nations.
Yeah.
Right? On the altar of your own, the glorification and power of your God, which is the state.
No, that's good. That's
right?
good.
And that is where they went wrong.
Yes.
It was not nationalism. It was a twisting of nationalism.
Yes, absolutely. Because, and I appreciated the way you said that, like this idea of, how do you say it? There's a phrase for it. It's something subsidiary. I cannot remember how it's said. Anyways, it's when you were talking about how your more immediate sphere, your more immediate circle of, where you know people. Those are your neighbors that you're responsible to love. Mm-hmm. It's not that you don't love the neighbors in the neighboring county, mm-hmm. but these neighbors are closer, so I love them first.
Right.
And then
yeah.
and
yeah.
then you love the neighbors in the neighboring counties, you love the state, and then you can love the other states,
right.
and then you
and the whole point of the gospel is that that ever widening sphere of neighbor and brother doesn't end.
Yes.
It's just a value hierarchy.
Right.
I still value and care for my national neighbors of Mexico and Canada, of
yeah.
South America, of Europe, of Asia. They are our neighbors globally.
Yes.
And we should still care for them.
Right.
And being nationalistic doesn't mean that they have to suffer for us to thrive.
Right.
The whole concept is love should extend in across all of those spheres,
right.
all of those ever-widening circles.
Right.
Love should be predominantly the consideration of serving my neighbor.
Yes.
And even as a nation.
Yes. And I think that what you had said earlier about my brain is just not working today. Anyways, it's okay. But you had a point earlier about... I'm running through some of the things we said. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Well, love this. It's fantastic. This is not the first time this has happened. Anyways, I think we're just going to move on because I can't remember.
That's okay.
Man.
Let's keep going.
I hate that
Let's
so much.
It's okay.
All right. But just the idea of the loving our neighbors local first and as that spreads out. That's a God idea, God's right. idea. And when the state or the nation state functions properly and sets this up, it's order. It mm-hmm. gives us the capacity to handle what we can handle as individuals. Because mm-hmm. I don't have the capacity to, I have the capacity to love the world, but not to be able to meet all the needs and serve the world and do all these things. But I have the capacity the reason I bring that up is because my responsibility is first to my local neighbors.
Right. right.
And then as that does well, and this is what I was getting to get at earlier. When we get ourselves right, then we have the ability to care for our neighbors in the other right. counties. And when we get those right, we have the ability to care for our state. And when we get that right, we have the ability to care for our nation. And when that gets right, we have the ability to actually be able to care for our neighboring nations.
Right. The broader nation is healthy when the local groups are healthy.
Yeah. Right? I mean, same goes for individuals.
You can think of this within the body,
mm-hmm.
right? Like the body is healthy when the cells are healthy.
Yeah.
You know, and if the cells aren't healthy, if the cells aren't hydrated, if the cells aren't working together properly, the rest of the body is going to be out of order. And that's what you see, I think, with us, with America today, is you look at local communities and they themselves are so isolated from one another.
Yep.
And we don't have time to diagnose the reason why, but that's just the case.
Right.
Is local communities are isolated from each other within themselves.
Right.
You know, and so then on the broader scale, everyone's looking for organization within the community, within the nation, and then they turn to the government for direction and power.
Yeah.
And so for the sake of time and just because it's on my mind.
Yeah, you're good.
Like, we're talking within the context of nationalism, what nationalism should be and what it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And we're using the words like love and service mm-hmm. and duty. And putting God in his proper place of authority.
Or acknowledging that he's there.
right. And so this is within the context of our biblical worldview.
Yes.
So where does Christian nationalism come into play with this discussion?
Okay, so I don't really want to jump into that, spoil it. And the reason is because I have it set up for an entire episode to break that concept down.
Oh, let's get in. It's a conversation. You don't have to break it down. We can tease or touch.
All right. We can tease on it. So
bit.
You asked, where does Christian nationalism?
Right.
And this is why I wanted to do a whole episode on it, because we need to be careful how we define that.
Yes.
We need to be very careful.
So then let's do that. Let's have a discussion about defining Christian nationalism.
Okay. So you're kind of jumping the gun here, but I will allow it for a brief teaser.
Good.
Okay, So Christian nationalism is, I believe, simply the acknowledgement of Christ's authority over the nation, over each nation state. And that's acknowledged by all the spheres. And when they acknowledge his authority and they function within the way he designed it, it looks Christian. It has the Christian flavor. Because as a good friend of ours likes to say, states can't be saved.
Right.
They can't. Mm-hmm. And so in that sense, there's no such thing as Christian nationalism.
But there are nations made of Christians.
But there are nations made of Christians. There are nation states that are formed on biblical principles that these individuals who are Christian are building these institutions God's way. Mm-hmm. To glorify God and bring about human flourishing. And so Christian nationalism that acknowledge that is Christian in nature because Christians are being nationalistic is a good thing.
Right. And I think the secular world of our own nation would look at Christian nationalism as a threat, not just to our nation, but all nations, because mm-hmm. I think they within their minds will connect Christian nationalism and American nationalism and think they're the same thing.
Which is dangerous.
It's very dangerous.
Which is something I really wanted to dig into in the next episode. So this is a teaser.
Okay.
One thing I do want to say, and this is also going to be a teaser for the next episode, is that I am not a fan of the term Christian nationalism, mainly because it was people who came up with it were they're secularists who wanted to try to use it as a scare tactic to keep Christians out and keep them from involvement in our society, in our government. Yep. And so I am not a fan of using it.
Neither am I.
I think being a Christian, I will be patriotic.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the same thing, but slightly different. We'll get into that. But as a Christian, I love my neighbors. I love my country. I want it to flourish. I want my neighbors to do well. Mm-hmm. And I want their rights and liberty to be protected because those are God's gifts to them. So all that to say, as we getting kind of close to where we're going to be wrapping up today, I wanted to just kind of touch on three different thinkers who kind of really built this idea that we've been talking about of how Christians should be involved in their society, in their nation state, in civic engagement. And I'm just going to read through a little bit more on Abraham Kuyper, touch on some Francis Schaeffer, which we are friends of Fran.
We are. I'm the biggest friend of Fran.
I don't know if you're the biggest. I'd give Fran. You a run for your money.
I've read him more. Don't question that.
I've watched his series more.
Watched the series.
Many more times. You haven't even gone through his How Should We Then Live yet.
Yes, I have.
You said you hadn't.
Yes, no, I most certainly have.
Okay, I'm just saying. You had said you hadn't done it yet.
I have since then.
I
have since then.
Good.
I'm a better friend of Fran than that.
I would hope so because I've only watched it like 5 times. Okay.
Do you wear his silly little socks too? And his small pants and his lederhosen?
Oh gosh, heck no.
Lederhosen.
I cannot do that. If you show up like that, I will give that to you. You will have that title, the biggest friend of Fran.
He looks like if a fawn from Narnia became a real person.
Or somebody from...
He sounds like one too.
Steps off the Mayflower and accidentally stepped into the 21st century.
Yeah.
That's what looks like.
I love Francis Schaeffer.
Yes. All right. So just to kind of go back on Abraham Kuyper. So Kuyper, you know, he talked about all these spheres of life, including government, family, church, and business, and they operate under the lordship of Christ and possess their own God-given responsibilities. And we just really hammered on that. Kuyper argued that the state should not interfere with the unique roles of the family or church, prompting the idea of sphere sovereignty to resist totalitarianism and encourage decentralized authority, which I know we just went over all that, and that's a good summation of his ideas, but man, I love that. And I say, yes, we need to get to this idea of sphere sovereignty, of Christ's lordship over it, because that does decentralize authority and it keeps us from centralized totalitarianism, which our version of that here in America is our administrative state, the bureaucracy that the progressives created in the early 1900s.
Right.
So any last thoughts on Kuiper before we go to the next one?
I think we've covered him pretty good.
Okay, good. So Francis Schaeffer, I think we just gave our little fanboy talk on that. So anyways, Schaeffer believed that limited government was necessary to protect individual freedom rooted in a biblical worldview. Mm-hmm. Individual freedom that's ordered under the authority of Christ. Right. Tying back to Kuiper. In A Christian Manifesto, which I love that book. I highly recommend that book for our listeners. Mm-hmm. He warned that abandoning absolute truth leads to tyranny. And he hammers that point. He hammers that that's why the court's out of line. That's why our government is, you know, so big and our administrative state exists because we abandon absolute truth.
Right. And to that line right there, like warning that abandoning absolute truth is what leads to tyranny is very similar. It's another way of saying what we were saying before, which is, when you remove God from the upper story of authority and power, something has to fill that void.
Yep.
And power resides where men believe it resides. Right. And if you get rid of God, then power has to reside with the government. Now government becomes your source of absolute truth. And the problem is the government is arguably the worst body on the face of the planet to govern ethically.
Yep.
And so
they
become your arbiter of truth.
Yes. And I think that's that. I want to make a clear distinction there. Government doesn't create morality.
No. But when you remove God from his the place where he's supposed to be within the divine order, something has to be the author of the morality of society.
I agree, and that's what happens. Right. It's that vacuum. But
yes, in the meta narrative, God is the author of morality, not the government. But I
want to make this point. Yeah. Government doesn't come up with morality. That's what's going on in our country right now. That's how we got redefined marriage. That's how we have the craziness of what's being taught in our schools. All those things is because we've abandoned the idea that, and we assume that government should define morality. Government doesn't define morality. It acknowledges God has already defined morality and what is right and wrong, and therefore it administers what God has already ordained as right and wrong. That's the distinction.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Schaeffer, he argues that Christians must resist oppressive governments when they violate God's law, his moral law. And I touched on that last week, how his moral law is fundamentally loving God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, loving our neighbor as ourself. That is the fulfillment of and the foundation of God's moral law and the biblical principle, as we just talked about how it applies to all these different things.
Right.
So when government gets out of line, Francis argued we should resist oppressive governments when they violate God's law. He called for civil disobedience in the face of unjust authority grounded in scripture. Like, you do it scripturally, you do it peacefully. He does a great job. I highly recommend you guys read his book. So that being said, though, I'm thinking here about, like, you know, Martin Luther King Jr. He did that peaceful civil disobedience. That's the term. And so many other, like Gandhi did it and other people that people really admire. Well, that's when government gets out of line. It's not, I don't want to get too far into this because, yeah, for multiple reasons, but I just would say, read his book. I agree with that point. Yeah. But as you were talking, I wanted to touch on this point, because when government becomes corrupt, it reminds me of another famous author who has a discourse in one of his books between two characters, and they're talking. I'm going to give it away as I'm trying to be all cryptic, but it's going to come out. The wise head in the group looks at another guy and goes,
I already know what it is.
Yep, I know you know. The Dark Lord assumes that we're going to use his power against him. Yeah. And it hasn't come into his darkest dreams that we would seek to destroy his power so that way no one can replace him.
Yeah.
And I think that's the idea here, that oppressive, tyrannical power, which is just ungodly, it's unjust. It's not about just getting rid of so you can set up another form. It's not about that at all. It's simply about, no, let's get to the way God designed it. Because right. then there's goodness for everyone.
Right. And another way of saying that is not much less poetic and beautiful and profound way. Is just don't fight fire with fire.
Yeah.
You know, is don't use the tools of the enemy against the enemy.
Yeah.
You know, because then you become them.
Well, that's like know. Proverbs talks about, yeah. like, don't desire the ways of the wicked. Choose none of his ways.
Yeah.
Like, don't argue with a fool because you'll become one. Yes. Right? Same concept. Absolutely. Yeah. So last one we're going to touch on here is, unless you have anything else for Schaefer.
No. So, okay. I mean, I always have things about Schaefer, know. But.
I was afraid you would just get on this and go, boom, we gone. John Witherspoon. He was both a pastor and a signer of the Declaration of Independence. Yep. He's a cool guy. Witherspoon affirmed that civil government exists to uphold justice, protect liberty, and preserve moral order. Mm-hmm. And there are some caveats to that. But yes, he taught that government is accountable to God, and it absolutely is, and that a virtuous citizenry is essential to sustaining freedom.
And it's that line that I think that we have lost.
Yes, that's what we were getting at earlier when you talked about people, power resides where people think it does. Mm-hmm. Well, when you forget who you are and your responsibility to be virtuous, then you're going to cede right. your power to whoever yeah. can take
it. And I mean, and we've missed both parts of that, both the government being accountable to God and a virtuous citizenry.
Yes.
We have neither one. And so it's no surprise that
not neither one completely. It's a broad brush.
Yes, it is a broad brush, but I would say even the population of America who is polled as Christian don't mm-hmm. live as such.
Often.
And that they're, I think, they separate their religious life and their civic life.
Yeah.
And the two don't mix.
Well, I absolutely agree with you. That's something I try to harp on all the time. I was on with Andrew and we talked about it. That comes from pietism.
Yeah.
A theological right. yeah. idea that yeah. God only cares about the spiritual. He doesn't yeah. care about yeah. the material or the natural or yeah. the physical, which is completely unbiblical, but it was massive in the 1800s and it was so prevalent that I didn't realize I had some of those ideas in my thinking mm-hmm. until somebody told me what pietism was. I kind of argued against it, but then it was like, whoa, wait, I've had some of that belief that God doesn't care about the natural. He just wants to make sure my spiritual's okay. That's not biblical. He absolutely wants to make sure my spiritual's good. He wants me to be in line with, reconciled to him.
But he also made us on this earth.
Yes, he wants and is concerned with everything. He's the Lord of all the spheres. He designed this system.
Yeah, and he put us in place as stewards of them.
Yes.
And so it's our duty to be good stewards of that.
Yes.
And you cannot separate a religious life from a civic life.
No.
The two have to be, they have to feed off one another.
Every political question becomes a theological question yes. at some point. Yeah. Every time, I don't care who you are, it uh-huh. will become that.
Right, because at the root of the question is I love the way you put this about civic duty, like and simple as voting mm-hmm. being service.
Yeah.
It's serving my brother. It's serving my neighbor. It's loving my neighbor well. And you cannot disconnect the two. It is your duty to vote, just as it is your divine command and ordinance to love and serve your neighbor.
Yes,
I love and serve my neighbor through my vote.
Yes,
and then the question becomes, well, who do you vote for? It's pretty simple.
Before you get into that, I would invite our listeners to go listen to our last episode because I touch on Exodus 18 and yes. Deuteronomy chapter 1, good. Where it lays out the biblical principle of who to pick as a leader because. Yeah. Again, that is God's idea that the people get to pick their leaders because the people have the authority.
Yeah.
Period.
That's right.
So, in closing, I think all this to say, we have to guard against the idolization of the state. That's right. bad nationalism.
Yeah.
That's where God becomes the state. But we also need to realize that the nation state is a good thing. It's part of God's system of bringing order to our chaos and allowing us to flourish the way God designed us to flourish. So we don't need to demonize it either. Mm-hmm. We got to understand its role. And its role is to defend and protect the rights and liberty of the people, as we've been talking about.
That's right.
So as men, we need to stand our ground, know who we are, know our responsibility, and start loving our neighbors. And that's the kind of, those are the steps we will take that will start restoring these things. How did Witherspoon put it? Government and all the spheres are accountable to God. Yeah. And we need to have a virtuous citizenry, and that is what will sustain and promote and protect our liberty. Yeah. Our liberty. Yeah. So,
and we don't have to discuss this, but just to say it. Isn't it interesting how at the end of the day, almost every question ends up getting boiled down to love the Lord your God and love your neighbors yourself?
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy how that works,
isn't
it? It's
crazy how that works.
It's pretty wild.
It's
almost like Jesus made everything or something.
It's like it's all like...
One could say he was God.
Yeah.
One might say that. One would be correct in saying
that. I would be like, you are absolutely, infinitely correct in that statement. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. In case some of our listeners are just finding out where we stand, I hope they get it now.
Yes.
Yeah.
If that wasn't obvious.
Yep. All right. So thank you guys for listening. We really appreciate it. We'd ask you to like, subscribe, share it with a friend if you found it helpful. If you're on Apple or Amazon or Spotify, please leave us a 5-star review. Leave us a 5-star review for that last completely butchering of that statement. Good grief, I can't talk. So we'd appreciate it. Thank you guys. We really appreciate it. God bless. Thank you for listening to the Free Man's Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe for more great episodes coming your way soon. For more information and to sign up for exclusive bonus content, you can visit our website, thefreemanspodcast.com. Thanks again for listening, and God bless y'all.